Hello, and welcome to Ask Margot Today. Welcome to our show where we explore the sticky questions of life, things that keep us feeling less than we want, a bit small, a bit sick, or a bit stuck, because we are not designed for that. We are designed for more, and in this show, we explore just how that works and what it looks like, what's possible for us. Health is one of my platforms because we all know what it's like to look around and see the people we love struggling with their health and to experience it ourselves in the small matters that don't clear up and the big ones that are truly debilitating and life-altering and sometimes life-ending. My concern is that we abdicate a lot of that responsibility, not because we're lazy, but because we don't know any better. We don't know how to fix things ourselves. What if we did, though? And what if we were capable of inputting more into our health, holding ourselves in a place of greater expectation, a higher expectation of our health? That's always what I talk about here. Make sure that the thoughts you are holding in your mind that actually affect your body biologically are the ones you're choosing. Make sure that how you're talking about your body is appreciating it, affirming it, showing it in no uncertain terms what your expectation of it is. The story we tell to ourselves and the story we tell about ourselves profoundly influences our health. We have never been taught this. We just think our body is physical and the rest of the stuff that goes on in our head is something else, not affecting us physically. But research more and more shows that this is not so and that our thoughts and our words translate into tangible results. If you're dealing with something profound, you'll probably find hearing this quite annoying. But I always say to people, don't poo-hoo what I'm saying until you've actually tried it for yourself. How can you say something is rubbish or you can't understand how it can possibly work if you haven't been prepared to give it a go? And frankly, we have nothing to lose by thinking more positively, speaking more positively, and believing a little bit more for ourselves. We have everything to gain and nothing to lose. So that's my introduction today by way of who I am and what I'm doing here. Listen to yourself and how you're talking about the things in your life that aren't what you want, that are not up to scratch, areas that you want more in, and see what your story is. And if it's not the story you want, that you're talking about, thinking about, and believing, then change it, because nobody else but you has that power, that right, or that privilege. And if you want something different, try this, because unless you try it, you can't say, well, that's never going to work. Try it on a little thing. Listen to yourself and how you talk about your body. Well, bodies are not little things, but do you talk about it like it's breaking down or aging or gone past a point of no return in some particular area? Do you say pain is constant? Well, don't say that anymore. Stop it immediately. Even if it is, don't say it. Don't focus on it. Focus on what you want and not what you don't want and see that you are able to make change. I'll never be a person who says this will happen immediately. It may, and that's fantastic. I find that I just have to hold a steady line all the time. All the time. Because anything else is kind of flaky. You cannot change your mind midway and say, well, that didn't work, so I'm stopping now. You just have to say, this is who I choose to be. This is how I choose to speak. This is how I have every expectation that my body or my circumstance or whatever the issue is going to respond to me. Try it. Let me know how you go. Onwards. We have questions today about how to tell if you are a spoilt brat, how to stop second-guessing yourself, what stress is and how to deal with it, and what do we really think about the rich? Number one, Margot watched a film where a girl suddenly asked her friend, "Do you think I'm being a spoiled brat?" It made me wonder, if you have to ask that question, is the answer probably yes? And if so, how do we change it? It's a very telling question, because most people don't ask that unless something in them already knows. There's a flicker of awareness, a moment of honesty, a sense that perhaps their behaviour isn't doing them any favours, or isn't who they want to be. So yes, quite often, if you're asking the question, there's something to look at there. It doesn't mean labelling yourself harshly or turning it into a character flaw. It simply means there's a pattern here that's worth noticing. Being spoiled, in the way we're talking about, is not about money or upbringing. It's about orientation. It's when everything is centred around what you want, how you feel, and what you're getting or not getting. And very little attention is given to the other person, the situation, or the broader picture. It's kind of self-focus that becomes disproportionate, and it's really quite unattractive. I have to add here that if you are the kind of person who does this, you're not sending a signal out to attracting better quality people around you. The good news is that this is easy to shift once you are aware of it. The first step is to pause and observe yourself. Notice how often your thinking is centered on, am I being considered? Am I getting enough? Is this fair to me? And simply recognize it, because awareness interrupts the pattern. The second step is to turn your attention outward. Ask, what does the other person need here? What is actually happening in this situation? What would a generous response be? You don't have to abandon yourself, but you do have to include others. The third step is to take responsibility for your response. A spoiled pattern often shows up as reaction, irritation, disappointment, complaint. We recognize those. But instead of expressing that immediately, ask, how do I want to handle this? Again, this comes back to identity. Who do you want to be in this moment? The fourth step is to introduce gratitude. Spoiled behavior often comes from a focus on what is missing. Gratitude shifts the focus to what you already have, not in a forced way, but in a deliberate move. What do I already have? What's already working? That changes your internal position very quickly. And finally, decide who is in charge. Is it your impulse? Is it your expectation? Your immediate feeling? Or is it the higher part of you? Because once you recognize that you are the one directing your behavior, the whole thing becomes quite simple. You just make a better choice, consciously. So if you ever ask yourself, am I being a bit of a spoiled brat here? Don't worry about the label. Take it as a signal that something in you is waking up and that awareness is the exact point at which change becomes possible. One way I think about this for myself is to ask myself, how is what I do or say going to affect the other person? How's it going to make them feel? What's it going to achieve? Or am I just looking for cheap satisfaction? The other aspect of this is, what's the energy you're bringing to the situation? Are you contributing or are you detracting? What do people call it? An emotional vampire. Because that's very telling about who you are as a person and your emotional maturity. There are a lot of grown-up babies out there and we just don't want to be one of them. Wouldn't it be great if every interaction we had contributed something before we left and didn't detract from? I think that's a worthy pursuit. Our next question. Margot, I find myself constantly second-guessing what I've done. I finish something and immediately think it could have been better, faster, clearer, more polished, more interesting, more timely. I don't want to live like that. How do I stop? I think this is quite a common pattern for us, especially in thoughtful, capable people. because what you're describing is not incompetence. It's awareness without really the proper boundary. You can see improvement possibilities. You can see where you could do better, faster, in a more refined way perhaps. And that's a strength. But without a way to contain it, it can turn against you. So instead of helping you improve, it keeps you in a loop of thinking, oh, it's not quite enough. I could have done better. I should have dot, dot, dot. The first thing to understand is there is no finished point if you're always looking for better and perfection. I know a spectacular chef who won't write a cookbook because he says he can't achieve perfection. And there was a Michelin-starred chef who wrote a book, well, a book was written about him, who committed suicide because he was convinced he wouldn't be awarded his third star again. He was awarded it, but he had gone from this life before the results came out. It's tragic. You could refine something almost endlessly. So the problem is not that you can see improvements. The problem is that you have not defined what good enough means. So let's start with that. It's done, not perfect. You learned something from it. Once you reach that, you stop. Not because it couldn't be improved, but because it has fulfilled its purpose. And no one wants to drive themselves crazy trying to be perfect. You have to let it go. This is actually a discipline. Secondly, separate review from rumination. There's a place for looking back and a place for improving, but it must be contained. So instead of constantly revisiting something, give it a boundary. I will review this once, I will take one or two lessons from it, then I will move on and let it go. No circling, no revisiting five times, no ruminating, because beyond that, it's no longer improvement. It's self-doubt rehearsing itself. Next, look at changing the question. Right now, your mind is asking, how could this have been better? Of course it can, everything can. Instead say, did this do what I needed it to do? Was it okay? And lastly, notice the identity underneath it. This pattern often comes from a quiet belief that I must get it right. I must not fall short. I must be better. So you're not just judging the task, you're measuring yourself through it. That's where it becomes quite heavy and needs to shift to something lighter. I'm someone who completes things and moves forward. That's admirable. Allow a little imperfection to stand. It's very Japanese. Finish something and leave it behind. Don't keep chewing over it. Because who's in charge here? It has to be you. You have to be the one deciding when something is good enough. The power sits in how you see yourself. You're the genie. You get to choose. You've done a good job. You can now walk away and maybe do better another time, but not carry it like a burden. Our next question is, Margot, someone said to me recently, oh, she doesn't do well under stress. And I got to thinking about that. What is stress and how should we deal with it? An interesting question. My first thought when I heard this was not, oh, she reacts badly under stress, but so where is it coming from and what can be done about it? Because if something is creating stress in your life, a situation, a person, a pattern, then the logical response is not to manage your reaction to it endlessly, but to look at the source and say, let's give that the boot. I know people will say, well, you can go to the gym and you can breathe and you can relax and you can be tolerant. Of course, but wouldn't it be more effective to say, let's go to the cause and ask ourselves why we're tolerating it? Because if you remove or change the source, you don't have to keep managing the symptom. Here's something else that caught my attention. On an Apple phone, you sometimes get little prompts that say stress levels or how are you feeling, that sort of thing. And I find that so interesting because what it's doing is planting a seed. It's saying stress is here and you've probably got some. And I think, why? Why would we focus on what we don't want? Why not turn that around completely? Why not ask, what's my chill level? It's kind of obvious, really, but we're not good at this. We hook into the things we don't want and we talk about them. We point them out, we analyze them, we play with them, we share them. We almost invite them in and give them a seat at the table. And then we wonder why they stay. It's like feeding the monkey on your back. If you don't want that monkey there, stop feeding it. Don't look at it, don't talk about it, stop pointing it out, because attention feeds it. Language reinforces it and focus grows it. This means not ignoring real situations that need to be dealt with. Quite the opposite. Deal with them directly. Change what you can. Remove what you can. Adjust what you can, what you must. But don't build an identity around being someone who is stressed or someone who doesn't cope under stress, because that doesn't serve you. So the question shifts not to how do I cope with stress, but to what is creating this and what am I going to do about it? Alongside that is, where is my attention going? Because if you keep your focus on what you want, ease, clarity, steadiness, you begin to move in that direction. And it's a far better place to live from than constantly measuring how stressed you might be. If I write another book, I might call it Stop It Immediately. Okay, on to our last question today. It's from Adam. And he says, people often talk about the rich or the wealthy as though they are a separate group. You've said you don't like that framing. How do you see money differently? I don't like that framing at all because it creates a perception of separation that nobody needs. It becomes them and us. And that does two things. It either places people above you as though they are somehow better, which they are not, or it distances you from something you might actually want. Neither is any good to you because money is not a fixed identity. Did you get that one? It's a position. And more importantly, it's a position that can change. So rather than dividing people into categories like the rich and everyone else, it's far more accurate and more helpful to think of money as a scale of experience. At one end, there are people who have less than they need. They are in debt. There is pressure. There is strain. They have less, so they are at the extreme end of the scale. Then there are those who are simply broke. No buffer, no margin. Then you have people who are living hand to mouth. The basics are covered, but there's no room for anything extra. Life is functional but tight. Next, you move further along to where there is some flow. If something breaks, it can be fixed. There may be a short trip and a few extras, a little party. Then there are those who have what might be called plenty. They can buy a new car, maybe another property, take some more trips, have a bigger party. Beyond that even, there are those with very substantial resources who can influence, build, and move things at scale. Their party is on a private island somewhere. When you look at it this way, something changes. It's no longer them. It's simply where someone is on the scale at any given time. And most people will recognize that they have moved through different levels of that scale at different points in their life. So it's not fixed. It's fluid. And that's important because once you remove the idea of the rich as a separate group, you also remove the distance. You stop looking at money as something that belongs to other people. And you start looking at it as something you relate to and can move within. But the real question becomes, where do I want to sit on that scale? not in comparison to anyone else, but for your own life. Do you want pressure? Do you want just enough? Do you want ease? Do you want surplus? That's a personal decision with what you desire and what you're comfortable with. Once that decision is made, your actions can begin to align with it. Because the aim is not to judge people at different levels. The aim is to understand that movement is possible and that you have a say in where you position yourself over time. So rather than saying they are rich, it's much more useful to say, where am I now and where would I prefer to be? Because that brings it back to something that is actually workable. Not separation, but direction. There's another aspect to this that's very important and often overlooked. We are magnetic beings, and you cannot attract what you are actively repelling. If you speak about money or about people who have money in a negative way, you create a contradiction in yourself. If you say or even think quietly that rich people are greedy, selfish, or somehow not good, then you are setting up a position where you're saying, I want that, but I don't agree with it. Your genie is getting that, and it will not give you what you want if you don't agree with that thing. Because at a deeper level, you will not move towards something you have decided is wrong. There are selfish and unkind people at every level of money. There are also generous, thoughtful, and impactful people at every level of money. So this is not really about money at all. It's about the person. If you attach negative meaning to money itself or to those who have it, then you make it very difficult for yourself to welcome it into your life. You create resistance, and resistance blocks flow. So it becomes important to listen very carefully to how you speak about money. Do you talk about it as though it's out of reach? Do you speak about it as though it belongs to other people? Do you suggest even lightly that it comes with something undesirable? Because if you do, you're giving yourself mixed instructions. One part of you is saying, I want more. Another part is saying, but I don't like what that represents. And your system cannot move cleanly in two directions at once. So the adjustment is simple, but it does require attention and intention. Begin to speak about money differently. Money is useful. Money supports my life. Money flows to me. I'm comfortable with money. Money allows me to share more. Not as empty statements, but as a way of aligning your thinking with what you actually want. Because when your language, your thinking, and your intention are all pointing in the same direction, something changes. You become more receptive. You begin to notice opportunities, make different decisions, engage with money in a more natural way. So along with understanding where you sit on the scale, it's worth asking, how do I actually feel about money? And more importantly, does the way I speak about it support what I say I want or contradict it? I think that's quite important, really. Thank you for joining me today. That's us for all the questions we have. If you want to write in to us to send a question, please do so at margounlimited.com under the contact tab, Margo with a T, or you can, of course, write to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz and send us your questions with anything that's bothering you that you feel is an unwanted part of your life, something that requires change or a new approach. Because we're very programmed with the thinking that we have been used to, that we have been brought up with, and that currently surrounds us. Sometimes we need to break out of that so that we can make real progress in our lives. I'm going to finish today with the word, our message from the universe. And don't forget to try the word app. It's at the Apple Store. Look for the word answers. You do get 3 days and 9 questions free. And that's kind of like calling God. Ask your questions. He's waiting to hear from you. This is a really interesting message, one I'm sure will be just right for someone who's listening today. Here we go. Always look for the true meaning of the words you hear. Don't be seduced by pretty flourishes and poetry. The meaning is what counts, and you know that I have always said, does it sound like me? If it does, follow it. If it is a clanging cymbal, a noisy, empty distraction, then it is not from me. I think we're nearly with our times up today. It's so interesting for me. I know I usually let the word finish, but I have a tiny bit more time. It's so interesting for me to see the consistency in these messages and how they always say how regarded we are, how important we are, how valued we are. And I think it's really important to remember that the universe always consistently sees us like that. And the universe is just another name for God. We are of enormous value. And I'm glad to have this platform here where I can share that understanding with you. So if you're feeling in a wobbly place, just be sure that you are covered in the universal, I call it, or in life. Thank you for joining me and see you next time.
This program was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio, supported by Erirangi Te Motu, New Zealand On Air. Stay up to date with the latest episodes, available on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple Podcasts.